because your whole life is new. Your whole life is different. And it's very reasonable to expect there to be some challenges and growing pains.
You've just tuned into Rebel Wellness Podcast, your resource for realigning and revitalizing your health and well-being. I'm your host, Kaylee, also known as Coach Kales. I'm a holistic health educator, certified nutritionist, and fitness professional of nearly a decade. I'm stoked to have you with us. You just joined a community of amazing souls who are ready to break free from the confines of the often outdated and confusing health advice all around us. Living in a world overwhelmed by quick fix diets and unrealistic beauty and body standards, us rebels stand for change. If you're like me, you're exhausted with the confusion and polarization plaguing the social media health scene. My mission is to empower you to step beyond today's diet culture, adopt a holistic health approach paired with the foundations of science for lasting, well-rounded wellness. Through teaching you how to tune in and embrace your mind, body, and soul, we'll reject one-size-fits-all solutions, realigning you on a better path that honors your unique needs and values. With new episodes weekly, this podcast is your sanctuary for deep wellness exploration, featuring expert advice, real-life stories, and a true commitment to your growth. Your journey to better health and simplicity in life begins now. Let's jump right in. Hey, Rebels. Welcome back to the show. Today, I am so thrilled to welcome back Dr. Kevin Obroy. We like to reference her as Dr. O. And I really enjoyed our last conversation where she got to share a little bit of her expertise on PCOS. If you haven't listened to that episode yet, that is a great one as far as getting a naturopathic doctor's perspective of working with women who have PCOS, or maybe you know somebody who has it, or you're not sure if you have it, but you think you might, you know, great episode to check out. But Dr. O has a really insightful background when it comes to pregnancy and postpartum, as she herself, you know, recently became a mother, and she dominantly works with a lot of women who are going through fertility treatment and or IVF, or, you know, and she herself actually went through IVF. So I really wanted to have this discussion today, as promised to some of my listeners who have been following on our social media accounts, that there is a huge gap in care when it comes to postpartum for the mom. We almost always focus on the babies, right? Which, of course, I mean, they are brand new to the world. We're brand new to motherhood. So, you know, they are the front and center all the time. However, your health as the mother is extremely important, equally as important as your babies. And so this conversation, I really wanted to talk to Dr. O to help answer some of the questions that maybe you've been having or you want to prepare for when it comes to postpartum care. And I really like the unique perspective to supporting women through their postpartum journeys that Dr. O is passionate about, not only from her experience building her care team when she brought her daughter into the world, but also her dedicated career to helping others feel cared for, heard, and supported as they navigate, you know, the ups and downs of motherhood, because there are so many of them. Sometimes the downs outweigh the ups at times. And so how do you handle that? You know, how do you take care of yourself? How do you replenish your nutrients? What should you be paying attention to? What shouldn't you be paying attention to? So in this episode, Dr. O is going to be sharing with you guys actionable, practical advice for new moms who are in the thick of the postpartum season. And so whether you're a mom yourself, like I said, or you're supporting one, this conversation is packed with valuable insights and compassionate guidance. So we are really excited to have her back on the show. And if you would like to connect with Dr. O, make sure you go check out the show notes. All of her links to connect with her are going to be there. All right, enjoy this episode. All right, Rebels, we have a repeat guest today for you, Dr. Kevin, and we are really excited to dive into a conversation today about postpartum. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be back.
Yes, and this was a conversation that you and I were pretty excited to have, especially because, you know, you semi-recently went through postpartum yourself, and you definitely work with quite a few female clients that are
currently going through it, right? And have in the past recently. So can you tell everybody a little bit about, you know, your own experience postpartum and maybe even just a little bit with your pregnancy as well?
Yeah. So my pregnancy came after a very long period of infertility. We went through IVF to have my kiddo. And I always like to say, I found out that I was pregnant like the day before the world shut down for pandemic. So it was a very interesting pregnancy experience, finally being where I wanted to be and then having all of that pandemic stuff happening around me. But honestly, I look back at my pregnancy as one of the best times of my life because I was just so happy to finally be pregnant. And it was tricky because we didn't know what healthcare was going to look like. My very best friend is a naturopathic midwife and she was going to be my doula. She was coming to the hospital with me and we didn't know then how many people got to be with you. I knew I would have one. And so I told my husband, I'm like, hun, if I only get one person, it's probably not going to be you. Fortunately, we were lucky and he was able to be there and she was able to be there. And I look back on my birth experience as just lots of gratitude. Everything turned out safe and healthy. And my postpartum period was also one of the best times of my life. I was really lucky to get to quarantine basically with my parents and my sister and brother-in-law and my niece. So we had this great little pod of people who were incredibly helpful and supportive. And my husband had time off from work. So I had a lot of support and help and it was great. It was really, really great. And then I think it was my daughter's 9-month or 12-month, I can't remember exactly, pediatric visit. And that's when we talked about my anxiety. And my lovely naturopathic pediatrician, who is our family doctor, she and I had a good long conversation. And that is when we decided that I should go on medication for my anxiety because I had done literally everything. And yet I had worried my way through that first year. And so I feel very passionately about good quality postpartum care. And because I got great postpartum care and I didn't want to go that conventional medical route. I wanted to do it naturally. I didn't want to, you know, do anything that could affect my daughter. And now looking back, I kind of wish I'd done a little bit more earlier. I think I could have enjoyed that first year a little bit more if I wasn't quite so worried about sleep and weight gain and all of the things that happen. But even with all that, it was still a great time in my life. And when I am taking care of patients, that's always what I'm thinking about. I want all of them to think about that postpartum period as just an amazing opportunity to bond with this new person in their life.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that even from the, you know, maybe let's say 30 clients that I've been able to like train through pregnancy and postpartum, it has been really interesting, you know, trying to navigate that good quality postpartum care, especially because like you said, you know, some of the conventional routes, they don't really help you move through it and like out of it, right? So that's why I'm really excited about today's conversation, because I think you're going to be able to bring a lot of our listeners great insights on navigating that a lot better, which it is great to hear you say that there are some things now when you reflect back to the prep before pregnancy. So I'll be kind of excited and interested to hear about that in a little bit. But for you, with when you were talking a little bit about like feeling in that first year postpartum, worry and anxiety, was it just the new motherhood?
It's so hard and it's so tricky. And I think this is why postpartum mood disorders are hard to diagnose, especially in first-time moms, is because your whole life is new. Your whole life is different. And it's very reasonable to expect there to be some challenges and growing pains as you figure out how to do all of this stuff. And a lot of my patients, and I'm sure a lot of your clients, are type A, gonna get through it, gonna make it happen. And I think a lot of women work a lot harder than they need to get through some of those hard times in their life. And this is what I hear from my patients too, my new patients. You know, I always ask about their entire hormonal history, including pregnancies and postpartum. And it is the rare patient now who tells me that, yep, looking back, I probably had some anxiety. Looking back, I probably could have gotten some help. And it's hard, again, it's hard to recognize in the moment because everything feels new and different and hard and wonderful. And so parsing through all of your own feelings while you're trying to figure out how to parent this tiny human and, you know, keep them alive it's a lot to handle.
Yeah. And I think that's such a good point because definitely I've noticed like, I mean, and it's probably going to be me, catch me in several years if we go through and have a kid, but the type A personality or more of just, I don't know, there's a lot of different phrases people have for like high performers and whatnot, but they just kind of feel like they can control that any chapter, and especially that chapter. Like, I want to get back on the fitness bandwagon and I want to get right into this and I should feel okay, or, you know, oh, it doesn't matter that my muscles still feel sore 5 days later. Like, it'll be all right. I want to get my body bounce back thing, you know, and which is such a toxic phrase. But yeah, so that's definitely something that I think a lot of people probably need to hear, is that like, it's okay to kind of release and let go and kind of experience that chapter with a little less control. Something I wanted to kind of expand on with that is, can you share a little bit some of the more common challenges you tend to see postpartum women struggle with?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so one of the things I always like to point out is that we call it postpartum here in the United States. In Europe, it's called antepartum, because a lot of times mood disorders start before the baby even gets here, starting before delivery happens. Almost a third of the time, depression and anxiety get triggered before delivery actually happens. And overall, we're estimating it affects somewhere between 10 and 15% of women, which is a lot of people, right? And so I think this is one of the areas where kind of the medical system fails people, is because of that label of postpartum. They're not really screening people for it until after. And then so many of people's concerns are really just brushed under the rug of new baby. Yep, you're not getting enough sleep. Yep, it's a big transition. You can do it. It'll get better. It's just really unfortunate that so many people, A, either don't get asked, B, are coming from a mindset of, I know this is going to be hard, so I'm just not going to complain about it, and C, not getting the help in pregnancy when, you know, you're anticipating all of these big changes happening to you. So postpartum anxiety is going to be worrying unnecessarily. Oh, I won't say that, because sometimes it feels very necessary, the worries that have, but worrying to the point where it's really getting in the way of your functioning, your ability to bond with your child, be present in your relationship with your partner or family members or other children, even at work, right? That's the other thing. The postpartum period lasts up to 2 years, I think it is. Like 2 years, right? So that's a long time. It doesn't necessarily have to happen that the mood stuff happens immediately after delivery. So that's one thing I always keep in mind, is for my patients who've had a kiddo in the last couple of years, how is your mood now that your baby just turned one, right? So being aware, yes, of the mental, emotional pieces of worrying about things, not having the energy, motivation to do things beyond the absolute minimum, right? Again, a lot of my patients are functional. They will take care of their baby. They can make sure that they are alive. They're feeding themselves and you know, doing the bare minimum to stay functional. But beyond that, there's not a lot of motivation to do the bare minimum. And it's hard because that narrative is reinforced, right? Sleep when the baby sleeps. You know, take care. Don't feel like you have to overdo it and keep your house perfectly. We get a lot of these mixed messaging about what's expected in that postpartum period. And so it's hard for people to parse out, am I okay? Am I not okay? I really don't want to do the dishes. Does that mean I have postpartum depression? Probably not. If you don't want to do the dishes and you don't want to do the laundry and you don't want to have your friends come over and you don't want to watch a movie after the baby's asleep and you really don't want to do anything, yeah, maybe that could be part of it. And it's worth having a conversation with someone. And then there's also physical manifestations to keep an eye out for, things like rapid heart rate, skipped heartbeats, headaches I see a fair amount of, digestive upset, specifically diarrhea. A lot of the symptoms that we actually think about with thyroid dysfunction are something that I'm always screening patients for. And realistically, before a patient started on medication, they should have some blood testing done to rule out things like hypothyroidism and iron deficiency anemia, which are incredibly common in pregnancy and postpartum, and, you know, can manifest as some of, like, you can feel exhausted because you have no iron in your body. You can feel exhausted because you're depressed. So let's figure out where that's coming from, right? So both physical symptoms and mood disruption. I'm often asking about sleep because there's this sort of narrative that people are going to be exhausted and sleep all the time if they can. But I have a lot of patients who can't sleep after they have a baby. That anxiety is just so deeply connected that they can't rest, or, you know, they have the baby in the same room with them, but every little snort and gurgle and burp that the baby makes, even when the baby's snoring and sleeping, wakes them right up. And so that sleep issue, that's just going to make everything so much harder to cope with when you're not rested.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the little concept. I'm sure there's a more specific name for it scientifically, but like the mom ear, like the first or second year. I even had it with our puppy when he was tiny, and it was just wild how much like I'd be partially on alert. Like it was never like my brain fully shut off. And I was just talking to one of my clients who's got a 6-month-old right now, and she's having the same issue because she just thinks she hears him cry like all the time. Yeah. And I mean, that's like, I know it's like a...
There's a biological reason for it.
Biological, there we go. Yeah. But then at the same time, yeah, it is kind of like, does it take hold of you? And like, is it going to stay with you forever? Yeah. And so that's great, like about kind of seeing the variety of ways that it manifests. And I think that was a really good distinction you made about how sometimes people just feel like this may be the first time in their life they've ever been that exhausted and underrested, and they can mistake some things as maybe postpartum depression. But if like the distinction is more of if everything feels like there's no will to do something, then like that's probably a little bit more like that. But I suppose the other symptoms can show up as like little warning signs or like, hey, something's kind of trending bad, right? That could be a thing sometimes.
And it can go up and down too, right? It's, there are different triggers that are going to make it easier or harder to cope with. And, you know, babies go through different sleep cycles where they do great for a little while and they're up every hour for a couple of weeks and you never know what you're going to get. And that's another thing that makes it really hard. And the reality is postpartum care in this country is just weak and pitiful. And so much of the care that happens in pregnancy and postpartum is centered around the baby, which on one hand is logical. We need to keep a really close eye on them to make sure they're okay. But that does, that shouldn't be happening at the expense of maternal health. And I know there's definitely an effort in more pediatric visits that, you know, those first couple of weeks that you're checking in with your baby's doctor, that they'll ask mom how she's feeling, and mom will grit her teeth and be like, oh, I'm fine. Can we talk about breastfeeding? Or can we talk about this weird poop my baby had? And it's so easy for moms to just pivot and be like, it's all about the baby. And so providers need to do a little bit more to suss out maternal health, but there's only so much that they can do in the current system.
Yeah. Yeah. No, totally. And I think that hopefully kind of the surgence of a little more resources available, you know, not the best mode through social media, but at least it is.
I found it so helpful. Like Instagram, yeah, in my postpartum time was so helpful in normalizing some of what I was going through. Again, possibly a little too much normalizing, but it's nice to have something to do at 2:15 a.m. when you are awake and the baby is awake and you guys are going to be up for a bit, right? I think social media is nice when people can share their personal experiences and help other people not feel quite so isolated and alone.
Totally, totally. And offer, you know, more professionals to kind of see that gap in understanding and, you know, touch on it, hopefully. But yeah, I even have noticed through social media that a lot of my postpartum clients will send me like the incontinence videos where a lot of girls make these jokes about like peeing a little, and I was in the grocery store and I was like, okay, it is definitely normal, but, or not normal. It's common. It's common, but it's not normal. You should really see somebody for that.
Yeah. Let's get you some help. Again, it's things that, you know, all of these sorts of symptoms, people will talk about this with their friends and they may not bring it up with their doctors. So if their doctor is not specifically asking them, or if patients don't feel comfortable telling their doctor, or if they feel rushed in a visit, they're just not going to bring it up. So a lot of women suffer in silence, not even knowing really that they're suffering because they think it's just a normal part of postpartum.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's that old kind of toxic narrative, I would say maybe from the generation of like women that are up in their 50s, 60s and stuff, where they're kind of like, well, that's what I went through, so it's normal for you. Like I've had a lot of clients whose moms have told them that, like, oh yeah, I had the same thing. And I'm like, but that doesn't mean that you couldn't get help or you couldn't get better, or, you know. So, yeah. Okay. So kind of on those symptoms, what would you say is something that would be like more in the zone of like a red flag to you immediately when somebody talks about experiencing it or something like that?
Well, so the first thing we always want to do is get an understanding of how significantly it is impacting their functioning and whether there's a safety factor involved, right? Are they worried? Are they having thoughts about hurting themselves? Are they having thoughts about hurting their baby? Those sorts of indicators of postpartum psychosis, you want to get a clear answer on right away. This is not something you're like, oh yeah, I'll make a note and we'll talk about that at your follow-up next month. No, I want to know that right off the bat. We're going to talk about sleep. We're going to talk about energy. We're going to talk about whether they're showering regularly. We're going to talk about what kind of help they have at home. And you know, what is their functioning? Are they going back to work? How long has it been since they had the baby before they're going back to work? How's breastfeeding going? Are you pumping? There's so many things that are happening in that time as you're getting to know your baby and how your baby feeds and what their patterns are. And then it changes every 6 weeks, that having an opportunity to understand how people are coping with all of that change is an important part of diagnosis. And then obviously doing a physical exam, making sure like blood pressure is fine. I like to feel their thyroid, listen to their heart. The majority of the time my patients come into me postpartum, it's pretty severe, again, because most people think that they're just supposed to get through it. So I really like to do physicals. I like to do labs right at that first visit, because just logistically speaking, getting out of the house with a baby is a lot of effort. And so we like to just get as much done at that first visit as possible so that their future visits can be telemedicine and just stay home with the baby. But I think it's really important to, you know, lay hands on them, make sure that there aren't physical signs. You know, we talk about postpartum hair loss, and yeah, there's a lot of it that's normal, but both thyroid levels and iron levels are going to impact hair loss. So is there something we can do to mitigate that hair loss that's going to happen?
Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of actually, for, you know, how working in this space, we're trying to help people advocate for themselves a little bit better with their practitioners. What would you say are like baseline labs for, or I guess a little context? I've found that having to help my clients sort of like advocate for themselves and specifically try to ask for specific like things to be ran tends to help a little bit better. Sometimes the doctor's like, why, you know, but it, at least it helps more of the doctors who are a little bit, you know, more up to date with like not just running just TSH, you know, and things like that, be like, okay, I understand. And I think that that's good. Let's do that. Because I've had a lot of friends who are postpartum go to their doctor, and then they tell them their postpartum depression symptoms. And then their doctor like doesn't run hormones, doesn't run even a full iron panel, like to get ferritin and everything. And so my question for you is, what specific like foundational panels do you think that people should request if they can from their doctor? Or I think there's even resources now where they can order it themselves.
Well, I mean, I'm always one to order labs that are actually going to help me do something. I'm not just going to order everything that's available, because we just don't need that, right? But I do look at a CBC, an iron panel, including a ferritin, to get a sense of not just are they anemic, but are they iron deficient, right? A ferritin less than 30 is iron deficiency. So I always look for that, especially if I'm talking to a patient and they're like, "Hoya, I hemorrhaged in delivery and I was fainting all the time." And my patient yesterday was telling me that, and she's like, "Yeah, I had to beg them for an iron infusion." She's a nurse, right? At least she knew, she was a labor and delivery nurse. She knew what to ask for. But most patients, like, they didn't offer it to her, right? So I really like iron deficiency postpartum. It is rare that I see a normal ferritin there. I do run a thyroid panel, TSH, free T3, free T4, including thyroid antibodies, thyroglobulin, and thyroid peroxidase, thyroid stimulating if there's more of a Graves hyperthyroid picture, because postpartum is a very common time to see Hashimoto's thyroiditis kicking up. And if we're not running labs, you're not going to see it, right? If you go into your doctor and you're like, "Oh yeah, around 2 months, 3 months postpartum, I just felt like I was crawling out of my skin. I don't really feel like that anymore. I'm fine now." What we'll often have found in that period is that their thyroid antibodies just really spiked. And then if you don't check the TSH until later, it's going to look totally normal. And it's going to be like, "Oh, huh, I don't know." So I am pretty diligent about screening my patients for thyroid stuff. And I tell my patients from the beginning of the time when they're pregnant is that if you already have thyroid stuff going on, I'm going to want to check your TSH at least once a trimester. I'm going to want to check your whole thyroid panel like 2 to 3 weeks postpartum. And then again, 2 to 3 months postpartum, so that if things are hard
and the hard is related to your thyroid, we're treating that. We're not just telling you to grit your teeth and get through it. I also look at B12. I also look at vitamin D. Again, you just grew an entire human, and many of them are breastfeeding and keeping an entire extra human alive based off of their own reserves. So while they might be taking a prenatal vitamin, for a lot of people, that might not be enough, right?
Yeah, and therapeutic dosage even. Some of them are
exactly, right? Baseline. We want to make sure it's getting in there. It's not just for show. So it's good to track those levels. But I will sometimes look at things like blood sugar, cholesterol. A lot of times that's been monitored during pregnancy, so it's rare that I find something new there. But depending on symptomatology, sometimes looking at blood sugar can be helpful. Outside of those, unless there's some other really distinctive symptoms, I won't do a whole lot of extra labs because so much is changing hormonally postpartum. You're not going to get a clear read through blood labs, and it's going to change so much that any treatments you might want to offer might be moot within weeks to months. And then there's also the reality for patients who are either pumping or breastfeeding, what treatments are even available to them or that we know are safe in lactation. So it's a good opportunity to gather data, but we don't want to put patients in a position where they feel like they're having to research and outsource and try things that may not be safe for them.
Totally. You mean like in terms of like all these different, sometimes medications and other times just like holistic ingredients to improve lactation?
Yeah.
Those kind of, yeah, I've seen a lot of that.
There's a lot of products out there. And I think that, you know, when we see a lot of either products or chatter out there about something, they're speaking to a need. And so we don't just want to negate the value of them, but I think it's really important to look at the evidence base and say, how do we know this is going to help? A bunch of 5-star reviews are really not the same as an evidence-based trial. So is it going to help, right? So I'm always a little gun shy about throwing supplements into the mix for my patients unless I have data showing me that they need it and it's actually going to help them.
And I'm kind of going back to what you were saying about how you monitor thyroid activity. Talking about the Hashimoto's flare-up and such, is it part of any of the mechanism of how basically the stimulation of the birthing process is like an immune function in the body? Like, does that like fire up other things that might have like a squeaky wheel or something like that?
I mean, it has more to do, I think, that pregnancy is an immunodeficient state. You need to have a suppressed immune system to allow this other person to grow in your body. And then going through the delivery process, that immune system sort of resetting itself, because your immune system is going to function a little bit differently when you're breastfeeding. You want to be passing along those levels of immunoglobulins through the breast milk. So the immune system is shifting, right? And if you've got this autoimmune tendency, you might see that, you know, going for a little bit of a roller coaster ride. Yeah.
Got it. Yeah. And have you ever observed those numbers shift to autoimmune like numbers and then come out of it like a year or two postpartum?
So if a patient has, there's sort of different pathways things can go. Is you can have Hashimoto's before pregnancy, during pregnancy, during postpartum, and everything basically stays stable, right? You can have it where you go totally postpartum thyroiditis and you went from being hypothyroid and on medication in pregnancy to, oh my God, take her off of her medications right now because she's so hyper. Or patients can go even more hypothyroid and need more medication. So that's why, again, the testing is really helpful. And in terms of the immune system sort of settling down, it's, I don't track thyroid antibodies that frequently. Like, I don't do it every single time I'm testing someone. I usually only do it if I'm not seeing a response to treatment. But I mean, I have a patient, her antibodies have been in the thousands for like 13 years and she's fine. Like, she's not symptomatic. So there's, I think we got to keep in mind that we don't know everything that there is to know yet about those antibodies. And a lot of my patients who tend towards anxiety can become really hyper-focused on lab values. So I try to stick to labs that I actually are going to change my treatments and not just give them things to worry about.
Exactly. To start going on Google University.
Yep.
No, that's great. That's great advice. Yeah. And I have definitely seen, even with my husband's Hashimoto's, the way that the conventional medicine system of just checking TSH and then just giving him levothyroxine and then the numbers continuing to not respond, that's what prompted his naturopathic doctor to go and do the TPO antibodies and all that kind of stuff. And so that makes a lot of sense. And women are definitely more prone to Hashimoto's, correct?
Very much so. Yep. Yay, yeah. Hormones make us more prone to pretty much every autoimmune disease.
Yes, we are spicy little environments. So that's really helpful because I think it is good for women to kind of know a little bit more what they should be getting checked postpartum, because I've even personally seen quite a few exactly the same thing like you were saying, especially with that iron and especially with, you know, all the vitamins and minerals, because I think from when I had researched, they say babies take roughly, can take up to roughly 40% of your mineral reserves. Because, you know, they need them too. And so they take them from you, right? And so when you were talking about that, that was definitely a thing that I think usually makes sense to a lot of my clients once I say that, because they're like, oh yeah, okay, I should probably replenish my nutrients. Is that something that, you know, you usually start to recommend clients within the first year, or what's kind of your timeline?
Yeah, I usually tell my patients to stay on their prenatal for 6 months to a year after delivery, especially if they're breastfeeding. If they're not breastfeeding, maybe just for 6 months, but you want to replenish your stores, right? There's this whole thing about postnatal vitamins that are out there now. I don't really know how different they are. I've seen a variety of them, but I think a lot of them don't have iron, which most of my patients need. So I'm usually just telling people to go back on their prenatal to get that extra iron in there. And I do check things like nutrient levels at least once a year on my patients so that I can catch some of these deficiencies early. And especially if I've got patients who are like, I want to have 3 babies in 5 years, right? Then I'm telling them, like, we really need to make sure that your body can handle that, that your stores are where they need to be. So I usually do like to keep people supplementing as long as their levels are indicating that it's beneficial for them.
And that is a good kind of clarification too for a lot of women listening who may be wanting their second baby pretty close behind the first, right? Is definitely think about replenishing those nutrients. I think that's something I've seen completely change second pregnancies for friends and clients. It's like, okay, so no preeclampsia, you had a good amount of magnesium in your body, you know, that kind of, which means, I mean, there's a whole lot of other things that go in with it, but I've definitely noticed that the way that they treat when you're going through high blood pressure with preeclamptic, like third trimester, is a magnesium drip, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's one of the first things they throw into the mix. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, totally. But along with that, what kind of is, you know, if you had, maybe you don't have, so that's also interesting to talk about, but if you've had a kind of standard timeline that you've seen within that postpartum period, what would you kind of say is what listeners who are postpartum can expect to kind of see?
Kind of typical.
Yeah. There. Yeah.
So after delivery, when they're in the hospital, obviously they get checked at like the 24 and the 48 hours. They're having their vitals checked the whole time. If they're delivering at a birth center with a home midwife, it should be pretty similar where they're keeping a close eye on you in those first few days after delivery because of bleeding complications and things like that that can happen immediately after. And then usually there's no care until the 6-week checkup. Unless there's a disease process that needs to be monitored, usually it is infant care that's happening in those next 6 weeks. So then it's you're taken care of in the hospital, and then you see your OB again at that 6-week check, and they're really checking just to make sure that your pelvic area and your perineum has healed up if you've done a vaginal delivery, if your C-section scar is healing up okay, you know, do a quick mental health screening, quick little vital signs, and then come back if you need help. There's not a whole lot of postpartum monitoring beyond that 6-week, you know, with the encouragement, please reach out if you need anything. And there's this sort of understanding that between pediatric care for the baby, maybe a lactation consultant you're seeing, that other people are checking on you. But I have found that that is a safety net with a lot of holes in it. A lot of people slip through that. So this is why I usually tell my patients, like, hey, I want to see you somewhere between a week to 2 weeks postpartum. I want to see you right at the 6-week mark or the 8-week mark, depending on when their follow-up is. And then I want to see you at, you know, 3 months and 6 months, because we want to make sure you're okay and you're staying okay. And if they're okay, great. It's like a 10 or 15 minute telemedicine visit, right? But there's almost always lots of things to talk about and check in on. So I find that those visits are really helpful to help recenter my patients into tuning into their own bodies and be like, okay, yeah, how am I doing, right? I haven't had a chance to sit down and really think about that.
Yeah. And it's probably beneficial too, because you ask better quality questions too, because I've noticed that sometimes people don't really think about stuff until you ask a really pointed question.
I always find it interesting that there's like, as soon as you have a baby in the hospital, one of the first things they ask you is what you're going to be doing for birth control.
I know.
And my patients are always like, I don't want to think about that right now. And you know, for me, it was hilarious. I'm like, it took me 8 years and multiple rounds of IVF. I am really not worried about
that. Yeah.
That is, women have menstrual issues postpartum. One of my new patients this week, she's 29 and had her third baby back in February. And she's basically been having a period every 2 weeks since like April. And she's like, I don't want to live like this. And, you know, tried the birth control didn't work for her. So what, you know, they didn't want to test. They don't want to look at anything. They're like, well, we can do an IUD, which is, yes, a very reasonable treatment option, not one that she wanted to do. So it's just so funny to me the way that care can sometimes just come to a screeching halt if you don't want to go with one of the options that they have for you.
Definitely. Yeah. And birth control is one of the most polarizing ones that my clients have with their conventional medicine doctors. Like the way that they push it so hard, you know, and it's just like the moment you're like, well, I actually want to like try to rebalance my hormones and get healthy and just kind of learn the fertility awareness method, you know, la, la, la. They're like, no, 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 you put an IUD in. It's like, wait, what? Wait, can't I trust my body and learn my body? Like, what? But yeah, and that is really interesting too, especially that postpartum for sure. And is it specifically more related to the periods or the like prevention of pregnancy?
It's a little bit both. So for women who are breastfeeding, we can really only introduce certain types of birth control and not impact their breast milk supply, right? So it's an IUD or a progestin only pill. Or you can, I think, do the Nexplanon, which is an implant in the arm. You can only, like, those are the only hormones that will not disrupt your milk supply. And so if breastfeeding is an important part of your parenting journey, then those are your options, right? And preventing pregnancy is definitely important, right? There are many patients who can get pregnant within months of delivering, and that's just not ideal. It's just not ideal for their body, and it's going to impact that next pregnancy. And so avoiding that in cases where parents aren't wanting to be pregnant right away is an important consideration, because if you're just coming through a delivery and you're not thinking about birth control, you could end up pregnant, right? It could happen. So I think that there is definitely value to having that discussion. But it can't usually happen when you're still in the delivery room or in the recovery room. And, you know, again, they're only having this conversation with you in those days that you're there. And then they're not going to see you again for 6 weeks. And you might not be ready for that conversation then either. So the idea that you don't get an opportunity to have that conversation again until you happen to remember, which, how are you going to remember that when you have all these things going on and this baby that's going to their doctor's visits every month or two? And that's if you only have one kid. If you have multiple kids, you're taking them to the pediatrician all the time. So your own doctor's visits definitely go by the wayside.
Definitely, yeah. So for like the situation of your client having super wonky periods, or at least bleeds, they may not be full periods. Do you then, if their doctor doesn't want to run specific tests and whatnot, do you go towards, you know, blood serum for hormones, or what kind of is a way that you start to navigate not using birth control?
I mean, definitely we did that first panel with the thyroid and the iron to make sure thyroid wasn't a big part of it. Running hormones, it's really only on a large scale evidence-based, those serum hormones are really only helpful for evaluating fertility. So I may do those to get a sense of whether and when they are cycling regularly versus having anovulatory cycles. But reproductive hormone testing is not going to significantly impact my treatment plans, because so much of what I do is going to be around minerals, vitamins, fiber, water, movement, the things that we know are going to safely impact the hypothalamic pituitary axis without negatively impacting breast milk supply or introducing something into the breast milk supply that's not safe for the baby. So hormone testing, I think, we still have a lot to learn about how to do that appropriately and use those data points effectively. And again, for me, it comes back to a lot of, okay, now we have this information, what do we do with it? Mostly it just gives people things to worry about and, you know, buy supplements on Instagram from. So I don't like to set people up for that.
Yes. No, I know what you mean. Yeah. It's a tricky thing to kind of navigate, because there's also, you know, a lot of the ways that people are like, well, this is why you do saliva testing for hormones instead of just blood serum, you know, and it's just like, okay, well, what is actually like the real way you figure it out? And how do you know exactly if you're supposed to test on day 3 or if it's day 21, you know, it's very specific.
Yeah. It's tricky. I think that we just need a lot more evidence before we can make real determinations about these sorts of things. And that's what I tell my patients. It's like, I'm happy to order testing that you want, as long as you understand that I don't have a large evidence base to explain it to you or recommend treatments to you. If you're just curious and you want to understand how your body works, amazing. I am too. But let's not pretend that your Dutch testing for fertility is the same as serum testing for fertility, because it's not. And not that one is good or bad, but one is validated with large scales of evidence, whereas the other one isn't. So we just got to know what to expect from the value of those tests.
And what about for clients, or just patients or either, that have PCOS or any like diagnosed major imbalances?
Those patients, so like endometriosis, PCOS, they're going to get pushed hard on the birth control because we can't necessarily predict how their bodies are going to react in postpartum. And what we definitely don't want happening is for them to just be bleeding all the time. Like, that's not actually a way to live your life. So that's, again, that's the main toolbox that conventional medicine has, and that's what they're going to use. And then on the more naturopathic side of things, that's, I think, what complicates the conversation, is that we have to balance the needs of the patient to feel well and function well, and then the breastfeeding implications as well. And that's why we go to birth control so often for patients, is because we only have so many safe tools to use for breastfeeding parents. For moms who aren't breastfeeding, yeah, I have a lot more herbs and things that I can throw into the mix for sure. And for PCOS, I mean, I have them on their myo-inositol all through their pregnancy. I think it makes a huge difference with their blood sugar regulation. And then as soon as they've delivered, if they're not breastfeeding, we can bring some of the herbs back into the mix. If they are breastfeeding, then I tell them, it's like, we've got to get you moving. We got to get the baby strapped on. We got to get outside for a walk. We have to make sure you're getting your protein in. Like, we don't have as much wiggle room for dietary imbalance that we do in patients who don't have PCOS, you know?
Yeah, that's really great advice and good insights on that. Because it's more and more common these days that women are dealing with the PCOS and finally getting diagnosed, rather, you know? Alrighty. So, I mean, it's like there's so many great things to talk about with postpartum, but I kind of wanted to finish up our conversation today talking about any of some of your most simple, you've said a little bit of them, but let's say a little bit more on some simple nutrition or holistic supplement recommendations that you would have for postpartum.
Well, so my most important piece of advice for postpartum moms is to shoot for a 4-hour stretch of sleep every single night. And it's going to be hard, and they're not going to want to do it, because they think it's their job to wake up the baby every single time. But babies can learn how to take bottles. Formula is not evil. If your baby has one formula bottle every night that your partner gives them at 2 a.m. and it lets you get a 4 or 6 hour stretch of sleep, your mental health is really important and sleep helps amazingly. So that's always something that I tell my patients, and I tell my patients' partners, is you need to make sure that they get a 4 hour stretch of sleep. That is how you are going to keep them as well as possible. So sleep is huge and hard. Like, I say that completely knowing that it is easier said than done. I mean, I had a baby, she wasn't even 5 pounds, right? So we were waking her up every 3 hours to eat. Really hard to get those stretches of sleep, but really important for parent brains. Then all the basics, right? You're a glorified plant. So make sure you're getting your water in, especially if you're breastfeeding. Really make sure you're hydrating well. You're going to have a lot of coffee to keep yourself going. So make sure you're having your water too. And then getting outside. It's good for you. It's good for the baby to get out there, get some sunshine, get some fresh air. We don't need to start marathon training.
Oh my gosh.
But getting outside for a walk.
Please say that louder for the people.
Oh my God. So many people want to get back to exercising. And I think it's wonderful that they're motivated to move their bodies. But your body has just gone through this amazing, incredible transformation. And I mean, Kales, you I'm sure could talk about recovery all day, every day. But recovering after childbirth is not the same as recovering after a hard workout or even recovering after a marathon. We got to give your body time to heal. And walking and stretching and getting slowly back into movement, there is nothing wrong with taking it slow, getting back to your workouts, because you're going to get there. You're totally going to get there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Did we start working together when you were, because weren't you postpartum at that point?
I'm trying to remember when that was. I think, yes, it was, because we were working out virtually. Yeah, I was postpartum, and
it was good because actually I really remember it was great because we were like mostly with programming, and it was good because we would discuss like, can we scale this back? And then I would just be like, you know, you can totally skip this one if it's too much, because I remember like Renegade Rose in one of your circuits, it was like, I just can't do that right now. And it's like, yeah, don't do it. It's totally okay. So that's definitely a really great point, is I hear a lot of my clients after and be like, I want to get back at it, blah, blah, blah. And especially if they did have any like prolapse, or they're struggling with incontinence due to their pelvic floor.
Or they had a C-section.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And C-sections, especially, very common nowadays. So it's like, it's okay. You know, give yourself like some solid, slow time. There's so much going on right now. Like, you have a long chunk of time as your kid grows up to get back into your crazy fitness or whatever, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you're not going to have the same body that you did before you had a baby. And you probably aren't going to have the same workouts that you had before you have your baby. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. Right? It's okay to do different things in different seasons of life. And I know in America, our independent moms, they don't want to hear that. They want to juggle all the things all the time. Yep. But it is okay to enjoy the season that you're in, and, you know, realize that your 5 a.m. workouts may be happening again, may not be happening again.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've definitely had lots of discussions with people when they've, you know, been, I got my 5 a.m. thing in. Do it while your kids are sleeping. I'm like, well, what if you need to be sleeping? Like, like, you're going to probably make things a little bit worse. And that's the other side to it, especially with a lot of the moms who like to do the running with the stroller thing. And it's totally okay, you know, if that is your thing, or maybe you were a athletic trained runner, but quite a few people in my experience aren't, and they mostly just run because it's the most straightforward thing they can do with their child at the same time. And frankly, I see it just make their cortisol situation even worse, because they're stressed doing the baby, and then they're spiking cortisol while running, because it's how you generate ATP, you know? And so it's like, these things can be a little bit contrary.
And then the pelvic floor dysfunction too. Ooh, I always worry about that with my runners. So
yes.
Yeah.
Totally. But
we're not bashing running. Running is totally fine if you love
it. No, yeah, it is totally fine. It is just one of those things where you don't have to do it right away. Yeah. I know. I had my friend from up north, Dr. Rachel Wysocki, and she was talking about it, because she's like a wellness, I would call her at this point, a running expert. Mm-hmm. Her conversation with me, I was just like, this is great, because like, you've almost convinced me to want to run, but my hips don't lie. I just don't like running.
You're supposed to listen to your body. Who told you that?
Exactly. There's a better way to do it. So this has been an awesome conversation. I will finish up our chat today with our usual question for our interviewees. And I will say, in what way, if any, do you find yourself a wellness rebel in terms of postpartum care?
Man, so many ways. It's not hard to be different given the standards of what's out there right now. I am a rebel because I really listen and I believe my moms. They know their bodies. They know their body better than any doctor is ever going to. And so if they've got an intuitive hit that something feels off, that's enough for me to want to investigate that and for me to follow up on it, right? It's this combination of, I'm going to listen to you if you come to me, and if you stop talking to me, I'm going to reach out and figure out why. Because I really see that postpartum period as a time when women need all of the support that they can get. And I like to just show up for my patients when they need me.
No, that's amazing. Yeah, because we have to kind of create our tribes. We don't have those tribes anymore, the same, you know, a lot of us don't, at least. And so that's amazing. And I'm so grateful that you are another practitioner who's really making an impact and better quality care for postpartum women, and just, you know, women in general, but in specifically to this topic. Thank you so much for being a part of the change when it comes to that. And what's the best way for people to connect with you?
My website, drkivenoberoi.com. Everything is on there. You can schedule, you can request new patient visits, all that kind of stuff. I'm licensed in Oregon, Utah, and Kansas. And my new associate doctor is almost licensed in California and Washington. So we're able to help a lot of people all over the place.
Oh, that's so great. I'm so happy to hear that. And everybody listening, you can go to the show notes. All the links will be there for you. So it'll be easy peasy. All right. Thank you so much again, Dr. Kiven. We appreciate you taking the time to chat with us. And I hope that everybody listening learned something new today. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out on Instagram. Or, you know, if you have any specific ones for Dr. Kiven, you can reach out on her website, like she was saying. But as we wrap this up, thank you guys for listening. And thank you again for being here. What did you think about that episode? If you enjoyed it, I hope that you would come join my community on Instagram at Rebel Wellness Podcast or my coaching page at Kaylee Loren or both. I would love to see your name pop up on my new follows list. I might say hello if I catch you. And I would also like to invite you to come check out my website, coachkales.com, if you're interested in seeing any more of the educational learning resources I have created for you. I have a whole ton of amazing free downloads that you can like dip your toe in the water of what working with me looks like. And if you are really vibing with what I have to say and how I teach it, come explore my courses that are available for purchase. They are all do-it-yourself. In the near future, I plan to have some awesome group coaching that will be all live, so stay tuned for that. And the best way to know when I'm going to launch those is through my monthly wellness newsletter, which is my hand-curated, not AI-generated, monthly all things health and wellness newsletter that I created to be your new favorite resource for staying up to date with the latest in the health world, self-care resources that I've created, and a bunch of the clean beauty picks that I personally use myself, and a whole lot more, as well as early access and discounts to anything that I create in the future for specifically my newsletter sign up. So if you'd like to sign up, head to coachkales.com and add yourself to my mailing list. Last but not least, I would absolutely love it if you would help our podcast grow by simply sharing a rating or review wherever you stream and are listening to me right now, and share it on your social medias or text it to some friends or family members if this episode resonated and was something that you think could help somebody else, because I really would love to help anybody in your circle if I've been helping you. So I absolutely am so grateful that you're here. And if you listened all the way through, you are a real one. So, all right, Rebel, until next episode.